Welcome to the EDUCAUSE Review online podcast. Institutions whose business it is to act as a resource for information often have little understanding of what motivates individuals to use particular technologies when engaging with the information environment. As a result, institutions focus on providing resources without fully considering the expectations or motivations of students and scholars. And those considerations are becoming more important to understand as engagement with information has shifted dramatically in the last decade. OCLC, in collaboration with JISC, Oxford University, and the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, have launched a longitudinal study seeking to identify the behaviors around information resourcing. Beth Forrest Warner spoke with Lynn Conaway, senior researcher, and Aaron Hood, research support specialist, both from OCLC, and Donna Lenklos, associate professor for anthropological research at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. Beth started by asking them for a description of the study.
We're very excited about our project, and we've been working on this for 2.5 years now, and we have interviewed 61 individuals. We are looking at individuals in 4 different stages of their academic careers. First year undergraduates, last year secondary school, high school, the last 2 years of undergraduate. Graduate students are in the UK, it's postgraduates, and then faculty and scholars. We're trying to see how they transition and how they change the way they engage with technology and how they get their information during their these transition periods. So we started out interviewing individuals, and then we asked a small subset to talk to us on a monthly basis. So they either submit written diaries. Donna is an anthropologist, and so she came in with a different viewpoint than we did. Mm-hmm. And so we thought we would try to have diaries. Diaries can be tricky, and so we still have some people doing written diaries, but we're also following up once a month with individuals to talk about what they're doing, how they're getting information for personal and academic situations, also how they are engaging with technology. And we have to be very careful. We can probe, but we cannot put ideas into their heads. So it can be tricky. This is our last month, so we're stopping mm-hmm. that. Now we're just trying to analyze the data. Mm-hmm. The next step is to go on and have a broader online survey, both U.S. and U.K.
The study puts participants in the categories of visitors and residents. Visitors are those who use technology for formal needs but have a virtually invisible online presence. And residents are visible. They contribute online and have a persistent online presence.
That whole theory of visitors and residents, again, came from our colleague, Dave White. He talks about the visitors as those who use the web and technology as a tool. And so I may be on Facebook, but I may not be posting a lot, but I may know everything that Donna or Aaron are doing because I am connected in some way. Or I may communicate with them or others in private messaging. I don't have this imprint, this presence maybe in this online environment. Which, again, does not mean I'm not using these. I just don't leave my imprint. Mm-hmm. And the residents are the complete opposite. They are those who really want or do have a presence. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that you're a resident in all of these technologies or you have a presence in every single social media available to us.
And they're modes of behavior. So one of the strengths of the visitors and residents continuum is that any given individual can act in these modes in a particular context. So the sort of things that I do when I'm doing a Google search to just find information, I can do that as a visitor in the sense that I'm not going and seeking people. I'm not going to a place. I'm going to find a thing, and then I use it, and then I leave. Mm-hmm. But if I am engaging in my personal network on Facebook, that's a place where I'm engaging with people. And even if I get information from them, the primary goal is to connect with people. And then the secondary goal is to get the information that I might need from them. So we don't have an essentialized notion that these people are visitors and these people are residents, but rather they're modes of behavior that we can then look at and analyze the choices that people are making. Why are they engaging in this mode versus that mode? Mm-hmm. What makes them approach this particular piece of the internet as a place as opposed to a tool in it? And it gives us a more nuanced sense of behavior online and distances us from this notion that simply because of somebody's age or background that they are necessarily somehow naturally better at being online, whatever that means.
Right.
It's not this monolithic thing. You know, people always use the internet like this, or people always mm-hmm. use the internet like that. So then on an institutional level, we can usefully ask libraries the question, why would you want a Facebook page? What mm-hmm. do you think you would do with it? What are the people that you're trying to engage with wanting from Facebook? And is that a reasonable strategy for you? Mm-hmm. So rather than sort of jumping in and saying, oh, people are engaging resident ways, we have to do that. So you step back and say, fine, what would that look like in a library context, in a central IT context, in a classroom context? And what would be the value add to that?
So it makes people think, hopefully, before they jump on that bandwagon.
Yes. And in a time of restricted resources, this is not trivial.
So if some of these students show a preference for Google when searching for information, should libraries keep buying the kinds of database services that we've invested fairly heavily in? Do you still see a clear need for them as versus just going straight to Google?
So yes, there's definitely a clear need for them. And part of what's important about answering this question is distinguishing search, like Google, from the content that they're searching for. And so databases, of course, are more than just how you look for something, but it's about what they get to once they complete their search. And so, you know, Googling in the absence of databases is going to get you resources on the free web, and many of those are quality resources, but they can't serve all of the needs of the students and the faculty. And what we're finding in our research is that they know that. Undergraduate students who are doing intro classes can often get away with resources on the free web, but at some point, the demands of the program that they are studying within is going to make them go to the databases. They are introduced to the databases and all of the paid resources that come from the libraries by their faculty, as well as by library faculty and people who are engaged in instructing students on how to find things. So, when our students are on campus, the searches they do through Google bring them to these paid-for resources, so they have access to more than just the free web. Helen Jorgis at CUNY has just published research that's a direct comparison of Google and database searches, and it goes along very nicely with what we're finding in visitors and residents, that students know that they need to get to that paid-for stuff. And they acknowledge that it's not necessarily as easy as just Googling something and finding it. But the fact that that's the material they need to do their work makes it worthwhile to navigate or figure out a way to navigate through the databases. So even if they say it's not as convenient, even if they say it's not as easy as Google, they do it anyway.
So are there any other insights that you'd like to share about your research?
One of the things that I've been thinking about a lot is the fact that sometimes librarians are talking about Google and how can we compete with Google. We shouldn't compete with Google. I think that would be a very wrong way to go. I think we need to utilize Google for what it is and integrate our services and our search functions, our discoverability into Google. And I think that's really exciting right now. You can look at things as saying, you know, we have budget cuts, people have all these other options, and we're not always the first. And most often, libraries aren't the first option. But you know what? It's a great opportunity for us to showcase what we have using these wonderful tools that are currently available.
So do you see implications for this type of information, your observations here, for how we might interact with MOOCs?
We talked yesterday in our session about embedded librarianship. And, you know, you can embed in many different ways. We do know relationships are very, very important. And that's what we've been finding. We've been asking some of the same questions since 2005, and we're finding that has not changed at all. But you can build relationships in a virtual environment, but it's harder. Mm-hmm. It's more difficult. But this may be a way to get librarians embedded in these systems. Plus having individuals answer the questions as well, and maybe having a librarian say, yeah, look, I have something to back that up. Mm-hmm. That's great. Because we know from our research that they're talking to each other in Facebook, not on the sites that the professors or tutors have created for them, but with each other. They don't want to be talking about their assignments with their tutors or professors.
I think that whenever institutions want to engage people, they need to think about the conventions of the web. They need to think about the things that people are already used to being able to do, and then think about the ways that they can configure their services to be intuitive. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We don't have to push them to a completely novel system to do the things that we want to do, because they already have systems that allow them to do that. The other thing that I think the Visitors in Residence Project is helping us think more carefully about is the nature of authority and the nature of credibility. And Wikipedia is a really good example of crowdsourced credibility. We had students saying to us, I know that it's reliable because so many different people contributed to the content of that, which is a very different perspective from the, I know that's reliable because that person at that university wrote that book and it has institutional authority. This more sort of crowdsourced authority that's coming from a variety of people is something that MOOCs might be trying to engage with, this idea that you could have peer-generated notions of what is and isn't okay. That's a very sort of digital resident way of approaching the nature of authority and sort of judging what's credible. And in these discussions that we're having in academia about open access, about the nature of peer review, I think these are much broader issues that we're going to be able to engage with the Visitors in Residence Project going forward. Okay.
Well, thank you all so much for your time today. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lynn Conaway, Aaron Hood, and Donna Lanclos, interviewed by Beth Forrest Warner. If you'd like to find more articles, podcasts, videos, and more, visit us online at www.educause.edu/ERO. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.